When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Folks, if you'd like a copy of my best-selling first book, Tales of a First Round Nothing, head on over to ecwpress.com. If you'd like a copy of my second book, Tales with TR, Fights, Film, and Folklore, head on over to www.flankerpress.com. If you'd like either copy personalized, just add a note. Thanks for listening to my podcast, and happy reading.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to episode 183B of Tales with TR. I'm your host, Terry Ryan Jr. The book, Hometown Hockey Heroes, the man, Ken Killer Reed. He's with us again today, Ken. It's great to have you here. How's the success of the book so far, and what's the feedback? You must be getting feedback from hometowns all over the world.
I am, TR. It's been great. It's been on the bestsellers list, Canadian nonfiction, in the Star and the Globe and Mail. The feedback's been fantastic. My favorite feedback, though, is from people going, you got to put this guy in the book if you do a sequel, because I got a guy. So,
yeah,
this is it's striking a chord with people. I know you just sent me a picture today, you and Pinky Gallant from a few years ago. So there we go, buddy.
I was going to say this a second ago off air when we introduced ourselves, reacquainted ourselves. But so Brad and Brett Gallant just left yesterday. They're here. They play a part in Shore Z 3.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so like I wanted to tell you ahead of time, but I figured it'd ruin the.
Oh, that's
anyway,
awesome.
Yeah, so I had your book in the room, and I'm reading it, and Brad tells me, he goes, "Remember a few years ago when you came to talk in Summerside?" And I do. Yeah. I know the Glantz there. Well, I call him Glantz. I think Gallant.
Yeah.
I've always said Gallant. Okay, that's what
it's
we Gallant. Say.
It's Gallant.
Okay, that's what I said. So, and so Brad's like, "Remember when I took Pinky in?"
Yeah.
And I was reading the book out of order because I was like going to get, it's sure. One of those books you can do that. You don't have to read it in order. So I was trying to knock off places that I'd either played in or been to first. Like Richie Perreault, I'd heard of him. I had to read that first.
Awesome.
I'd heard of him in St. Albert years ago. Mark Steffen played for the St. Albert Saints as a junior, as an underage. He was part of Tri-City. So I would go over there and hang out with them. I watched the Saints for years. I know all about it. I know the rink that you're explaining on the one side.
Oh,
and
awesome.
I knew Richie Perreault worked for the city. I knew he was a legend. Years later, I played in Bentley with guys that we picked up, Indigenous players from up north. I think it was Cunningham's were their name. They spoke about Richie Perreault. So anyway, I'm getting off topic to start,
awesome.
But I guess I'm dead center right on it. But it resonated with me for a lot of those reasons. I kind of went out of order. But anyway, I come to Pinky Glantz. I'm like, are you guys kidding me? I look over in the room. I'm like, you know, it's our fourth day being here doing these. And he goes, yeah, remember I took him and we got that picture a few years ago. I was like, yeah, I do actually. I remember meeting him. I forgot getting the picture. Brad sends me that as I'm reading the story about him. Tough cat too.
Oh, now, yeah.
What I love about the book, the
Quick question. Yeah. Did Brett get a couple days off from hockey, or was it during the week that you guys filmed? Because they're mostly playing on the weekend in the American League. Because he's playing this year, right? Still?
No. Alex is playing. Yeah,
Brett retired.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Yeah, he was.
Alex is one of the last gunslingers left, man.
And I love that Brett got his. He got four games in with the Islanders, man. He did it. It's awesome.
He did, and he had that, as you explain in the book, that wild fight with Cassian, who's an NHL tough player, right?
Yeah, he did. And I did an event with Brian McGrattan, who Alex had his big tilt with. That's in the book.
And the boys aren't huge. You think the Glant brothers, man, you guys, for those that don't know, most of the hockey world has heard of at least one of them, but they're three guys that are from Summerside, PEI. Mm-hmm. You want to talk stories about hometown hockey heroes. I'm talking about their dad, Mike Pinky Glant, is a chapter in Ken's book. And these guys, this family is one of the toughest hockey families ever in the world. And, they're good Islander guys with exactly what you would think. Like their beers, like their hockey on the rough side.
Awesome and, dudes.
You're going to love it. I don't want to give anything away, but they're not playing the Glants in the show, but you can tell who they are, put it that way.
I said during the way Calgary started the season, and it's kind of continued, and maybe I'm being a little biased, but I thought
they
should have called Alex up. He's sitting in town, right? The Calgary Wranglers, the AHL affiliate of the Flames are right there in town. Call them up for a game and say, guys, this is what giving a shit looks like.
Yeah, you know? I know. I agree with you. It's right there. Why not even for one game? Anyway.
This is what caring looks like, you know?
Yeah.
And if any guys are on the team going, what they call him up for? Well, you're not the kind of guy that we should be.
This is what comes. Of course, we have that attitude because we're old school. We're hockey guys. And there's the physical part is as important as the finesse part. And the skills part. That's what make it such a beautiful game. Mm-hmm. I've had Pavel Barber on my show last week, which would be the one end of the spectrum, the dangling. Sure. And I've had guys like Jody Shelley on, right, that represent the other side and everything in between. And I love that about the game. So what I'm getting at here is that energy and that passion comes through in the book and almost every chapter.
Thank you, buddy.
Some, like Richie Pro, you talk in there, for example, and he was a great player. I heard of him as like a local legend, like you speak of Robbie Forbes, which we'll get into. But he also could throw down. Pinky Glant, same sort of thing. When I first heard about him, like if I was to ask my father, he would say Pinky's like a great hockey player.
Right? Yes.
But locally, he was no different than the boys. Like he threw down, and a lot of people would tell you he's the toughest. Depending who you talk to, there's going to be a legendary story at the Summerside County Fair in the summer, and you're going to hear about all these guys, but you're just as inclined to hear a story about how tough Pinky was as how good he was. And I guess that's what hits home with me because, the first chapter, Robbie Forbes.
Yeah.
Okay. I mentioned in there, I mean, he was an idol of mine. I remember taking creative writing in school. I mean, I got an English minor, a BA, folklore major, English minor. And I remember like more creative writers wanting to go and do fiction. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, there's a way that you can color there could be, because in other words, there's more room for creativity. But for me, I'm like, there's a way you can color nonfiction as well. And you've got to really, like, you can create an imagery without having to sound like a journalist and factual, right? And that's kind of what you do. And I love that because all the, like, within each story, there's a little story. Like, I believe in that. What's his name? But the announcer for Columbus, George
Matthews.
George Matthews, right? He'll come up in the book. Forbes Kennedy. These are little stories within the bigger story that you're telling.
Yeah.
But of local legends and that passion. So I know you've gone there before in the books. They all have a common denominator. But to me, this one, I mean, I was literally goosebumps and tears in my eyes more than once. So I know this is a long statement / question. But when you were going through this process, like how I remember you told me, but I forget. How did you find these players? And once you did and you're in the middle of the story, because all of these are stories. This isn't stats and like one page here.
Correct.
You're dedicating a bunch of mini short stories to each individual legend. So that process, like, how deep did that go? And like, did that touch you like it touched me?
Oh yeah. I mean, I love the game the same way you know, whatever chocolate or Kool-Aid they gave out in the mid-70s, early 80s, you and I drank the same stuff. I think we fell in love with the game for the same reasons. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, Pavel Barber and Jody Shelley. Well, you and I saw something that clicked. I know we both love Gretzky, but we both love Semenko too.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
So how I did it, I threw it out on Twitter. You know, I got a local legend named Dana Teapot Johnson. He's the king of Picta. Who's the guy in your town that thrilled the town? Didn't make it to the NHL, but thrilled the town. And a bunch of people came in with stories. So what I do is the people that, for better word or less, nominated, say, a Bruce Campbell in New Waterford, I'd call that person and say, tell me about going to watch Bruce.
Yeah,
and they'd just tell me. And they'd say, oh, he used to stay on the ice and watch until he hit the crossbar, and then we go to the canteen, and we think the owner sent him out to get the people all riled up. And then I'd call Bruce, and I'd get his version of it. And I guess when you talk about the folklore part, and I just thought about this when you were asking that question, I think the book in a lot of ways is old school sports writing. Because old school sports writing, if you were covering a game of the Canadians back in the day, or let's say the New York Yankees back in the day, there were no cameras in there. And you had to set the stage. You had to illustrate what was going on. And I think, and that wasn't intentional, but it's funny you mention it now. I think that that's kind of what I tried to do, because literally I have to set the stage. And my publisher, Simon Schuster, Kevin, the Kevin Hansen, the head guy there, he said, I need to know about the town too.
Yeah.
Because he was smart. He's a smart cat. And he's like, I need to know about the town, because the town sets the stage as well.
It does, and that's what we identify with.
Right. I got to take the reader and bring them to that town. I have to bring them to Corner Brook, Newfoundland in 1985.
Yeah.
Right? I have to bring them to this New Waterford, Nova Scotia in 1977. So that's done through, well, factual research, you know, the population of the town was. But then it's mostly done through the words of the people I'm interviewing. And if you're doing it through the words of the people you're interviewing, you're kind of going to get that folklore image of the town from 1977, right? I'm not going to tell you what the architecture is like, but Buddy's going to tell you, you know, the town, you know, Corner Brook had a mill and it stunk, and, you know, but we loved it. And
like,
so
on
the same, so same way talking about Picto, you know, you could smell the mill, but you'd go to the Hectorina, which was just down over the hill from my house. You paid a buck to get in, and there was cigarette smoke everywhere. And, you know, you didn't go down to the far end because that's where the funny cigarette smell came from. They weren't Des Mauriers. And, you kind of just set the stage. So the people that I interviewed about going to watch their favorite players, they told me about their favorite players, but they also kind of set the stage for what the town was like, which I really loved, because that came just as much, not as much a part of the book as the
I loved it. And even if you're from Toronto, you've been to those places. Just one sec, I'm heating this up.
Yeah.
Eating up my coffee. Very unprofessional, but I don't think my listeners care.
No.
So, listen, I love that about it. And it's funny, until I read the book, I didn't realize how subconsciously, like, I worked in Cornell because Cornell was a lot like home, like Corner Brook. When I say Rob Forbes, like, I went on the trips. Like, I didn't just watch home games in Mount Pearl.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, Robbie Forbes is actually Sidney Crosby's uncle, but he's a Newfoundland legend. He moved over, and Corner Brook the Herder is big at home, the local Newfoundland, the provincial championship, real big. I can't even explain how big for a local hockey championship this thing is. But we go for the Allen Cup too. Lost last year in the final. Clanville Caribou is my old team. But this particular years in the 80s, Corner Brook had gone and they had a 3-0 series lead and lost it.
And I remember that being real. They lost all four at home. Did they not?
All four at home. I was at it. Like, we went out. We were in Corner. Like, I don't know how it worked because Mount Pearl weren't out there. They weren't. They didn't have. I guess maybe my parents just went out and watched because it was the Allen Cup in Newfoundland. But those are my first memories. And Robbie Forbes came over and took them to the championship. And but it wasn't just that. Like, I wasn't even unaware of that at the time, like how big the Allen Cup was. it was just watching Robbie every day. Like sure. he just knew how to play. Like he was an idol. Like I watched everything about him, even where he went. And it was funny because you mentioned in the book how he wore the Gretzky Jofa.
Yeah.
But just like Gretzky, I'm telling you, I'd say it sounds funny to say, but like he did the same thing. The Gretzky, he would go on the ice to where the puck wasn't. Like it was obvious. Like watching him, there was something about this guy. Mm-hmm. And like there's only tiny little rinks. The rink the Mount Pro played in literally was called the Tin Can. There was nowhere to go. But he always seemed to get the open ice.
Yeah.
Right. And that really, like, I really noticed that he became this legend. But and I played again for the Cornerbrook Royals for 4 years, 05 to 07, and then 10 to 12. And going as there so much as a kid, it had the mill and it had the smell. And when I went to Quesnel, we also had a senior team, the Kangaroos, and they'd battle for the Hardy Cup.
Yeah, there's a lot of Kangaroos in British Columbia.
Yeah, I know. Wild, hey? It's just wild for every reason.
And alliteration.
For so many reasons. Yeah, and exactly. But they added the senior team, though. So I would go and watch that, and the smell, like you talk about even Pictou. Like at first I was like, Jesus, this, are you kidding me? Like it smells all day, but then you just get used to it and you don't even care anymore. Yeah.
Doesn't smell anymore, thank God.
No, but I know Quesnel is the same and Cornerbrook, but
yeah.
It was just nice to those things, like the sights, the sounds, the smells, the arenas that you're explaining, like even with Richie Perreault, like I was like, he's St. Albert. They packed that one side of the rink.
Yeah.
Right. And I can just imagine, like I used to see Robbie Forbes with that smoke, you know, halfway through the game, it was just a wave of smoke. I'm like, I could put myself there watching Richie Perreault.
Yeah.
Now, look, I got to ask you, one of your first lines in the book explaining that about your own self and your own Pictou County, you say about that high school, you start talking about it's the first non-denominational school in Pictou, and how one school leads into the other, the elementary school to the junior high to the high school. But then you say, I hated that place. That's for another book. Is that because you were lacking as a student?
I hated high school. Combination of things. I kind of knew it was not pointless, but pretty close to pointless because I knew what I wanted to do in my career. And I knew I didn't need to have a 98 in math, but also they graded so strictly. And the high school had this attitude that they were better than the other high schools academically. And I'm like, you're not, you're a public school. We're all the same. Like I saw that, but all these people are like, oh, Pictou Academy. I'm like, no, no. So then they graded higher. So a lot of kids ended up dropping out or failing when they should have just been helped to get through high school. So I saw this as kind of a big schmoz, right? This isn't right.
Yeah.
So you could go a lot. So there was a girl in my class who went to another high school in the county just because it was easier. It wasn't like big. So their whole thing was, we're going to prep you for university. And I'm like, well, what about the kids who aren't going to go? What about a guy who wants to be a plumber? Or
which is an awful lot of us, which is a lot of people.
Right. So they graded really strictly. There was an aura of we're better than the other guys. And they're like, universities recognize when you come from Pictou Academy. Guess what? They don't. That was a bunch of BS. Also, I was a nerd. I had the glasses up until grade 11 when I switched contacts because I couldn't see out of the side of my XL7.
I
wasn't an outgoing socialite. So all those things combined to lead me to hate high school, but mostly because math was stressed. I found math pointless. You know, I was good at English and I was good at history. Go figure.
Me too. I was exactly same boat. I had to really, 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 really work at math.
So I didn't like it. It was kind of like the high school had this, and not the kids, but the institution had an aura of we're better than you. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're not a New England preparatory institute. You're a public school in Nova Scotia. Get off your high horse. So I wasn't a fan.
What about the, I don't understand, the Zamboni was a tractor?
The tractor, yeah. So it was funny.
I've never seen this before. Explain.
So you know the thing on the back of the old flood machines? We just had a tractor, a Massey Ferguson or whatever it was. We just haul the ice scraping part on the back. All the rinks in Pictou County were like that.
Really?
We didn't have Zambonis. The first one to get a Zamboni, I think, was New Glasgow Stadium. And then in Pictou, they bought an Olympia. The problem was Pictou had these big, deep corners, which they've since changed. The Zamboni or Olympia couldn't get into the corners. So you ended up with the corners would never get flooded. So it's funny, my my brother and I are playing men's league here a few years ago, and Peter comes in, he goes, boys, get ready, the tractor's almost off the ice. And all the boys are like, the tractor? What the hell are you talking about? So, yeah, it was a tractor that hauled the whatever the flooding mechanism on the back was, just hauled that around.
Wow. So that's my next question is kind of like the other ones, but I want to know, when you went to these places, did it remind you of home? Like, there's one thing that me traveling all over and spending a lot of time in every province,
is
I find there's so much similar with all the small towns. Totally. Everything we're talking about, when we're just talking about from a hockey angle, but there is so much. Like Quesnel, when I went to QSS, Quesnel Secondary School, and then just down the road was Williams Lake, and that was kind of similar. And then every province, which is country, is so big and vast, but you could be in Grand Falls, Newfoundland, or Quesnel, BC, and God damn it, if 90% of it isn't really similar, you know?
Damn right. So yeah, when I went to Corner Brook for the first time, I'm like, oh my God, it's non-stinky Pictou, because they had a mill, and the mill didn't stink. And I'm like, how come we can't do this? How come we can't do this? Back. You know, it was like clean Pictou. And yeah, when you get outside of the cities, it's Canada, man. It's kind of the same. And
I love driving across. I still love it.
Oh, yeah. Really? And I wrote this book as much for small town people as I did for somebody here in Toronto to go, there's more to hockey than going to a Leafs game on a Saturday night. This is the heartbeat of the game.
That's another thing I love about it. And we were in the room and I was explaining this to the gyms, Brandon and Jordan Nolan, both well-traveled pro hockey players, and John Morasti, another well-traveled.
Tell Nasty I said hello.
I will. I certainly will.
Please do.
And I was explaining it to the boys. And I have the book in there, right? So in between scenes takes a while. I got yours. I got Ted Nolan's new book over there. You know, some reading in there. And so things come up. I don't know, chicken or egg. What came first? But I said, okay, after Christmas, I'm going to take Penny Lane up to another Habs game. They're nice enough. Alumni are great. They give us tickets if we give them enough notice. I took Penny Lane up last year. She met Rajon Houle and Gilbert Dion, and we went to the alumni room, and it was a real experience that she loves. And that'll be, I guess, my legacy with the Habs is having played there and take my daughter up and watch some games, and she's made a connection, and I really love that. But it's funny because – for every small town, Mount Pearl's 30,000, I guess, but we just have a small town feel. I mean, there's smaller towns. I know in your book, there's towns of 800. There's Claire's Home, is it? And there's, you know, St. Alfred, a little bit bigger. There's a lot represented. But what I'm saying is that you can come from a small place. It's a novelty for us to, like, fly into Toronto and watch a Jays game and watch a Leafs game or fly into Montreal and then go back. It's small town going into the big city. But your book is the big city going in. Like, not a lot of people from Toronto think, okay, let's go to Flin Flon and watch the Bombers.
Right.
Unless you're an ally of Freddy who travels.
No one does. Unless you're Al. No one does.
No.
So I wanted to show them that. And so when I look back and as a kid, I was so jealous of people that could just get on the Metro and go to a Canadiens game. But I got to go to one in grade 7, and then I got to grade 11, I got to go. And now looking back, I'm like, geez, I had the best of both worlds. I got to see the Pictou Mariners, but the people here didn't get to see that. So I kind of say, look.
Go. And it meant so much. Sorry.
Right. Like, go out to your local rink. Even if you're in Toronto, go watch the Markham Waxers or the Junior A team in Stouffville or the Toronto Canadiens junior team. It's here. It's just Toronto's always had the rep as it's not a hockey town. It's a Leafs town. I would say that's very true. Mm. But I mean, get out and watch, man. We live in an era, as you know, and you and I could probably go on about this forever. There's a game on every night. You got your phone. You got your TV. You don't have to go out, but get out, man. Get out and watch hockey and have some rink fries and Christ, go outside and inhale some secondhand smoke. Make it a little old school, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah, man. The sights.
Maybe
the
not
sounds,
the secondhand
no,
smoke.
The culture. Well, I know what you're explaining, though. The culture of small town hockey, of, you know, doesn't even have to be small town, grassroots hockey there.
Right. And the best thing about our old school small town hockey, as you know, it was your guys against their guys. It was really what hockey. When hockey
another
started,
reason I love, right. again, another right. reason a lot of these stories are that. You talk to a lot of these people. This Randy Keller, he's like, it's like the fourth time. And you're like, dude, people are begging you to go pro.
Yeah.
But he keeps going. He's like, well, I know, but I just didn't really want, like, if I don't want to do it, like a lot of them keep going. Bruce Campbell's another guy. I don't know. Like I was offered to go to Winnipeg and then I just kept saying no. Well, there's a reason, I guess, because they're more it's not for everybody. And they were committed to whatever senior team they played on, usually their hometown or about. They were really, really committed, as they would be playing in the NHL. It wasn't that they'd lack passion for the game,
but they had passion.
Fucking beat yours, you know?
Right? They had passion in bounds, because why else would you play? They're playing for the passion because they weren't making money. So my one takeaway from this book is, don't let anyone else define your definition of success.
Man. Yeah.
You know,
I tell you,
why didn't you make the NHL? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Well, that's your opinion of me. What's my opinion of me?
Success is in the eyes of the beholder.
Absolutely. Don't let anyone define your definition of success. And that's what I hope the guys in the book got out of this too, because they were very successful. So, like, how can you not be successful if you pass on the love of the game to all these people in the book that are talking about you?
More than once in the book, it comes up. You see a guy standing over by his like retired jersey in the hometown rink next to his plaque or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That there you go. That's it. Yeah. That's a legacy. That's a hometown hockey hero. Right.
That's
and he's sitting there and like, you know, yeah, because I often say that to people. I'm like, there's so much more to the game than just defining success by the NHL.
If it isn't for this type of hockey, there is no NHL. That's where these guys come from.
Yeah.
And it's even true here in Toronto. If you're playing for the Don Mills Flyers, well, you're going to grow up to pray and hope that you're going to play in the NHL, but you're probably going to play in the beer leagues. But maybe you can go play senior somewhere. Like, just don't let the game use you. Use the game.
Another thing, you talk in this Keller chapter. Now, I don't know if they're related. I don't. But when I played junior, I talk about the Kamloops Blazers were in my division. They won 3 out of 4 Memorial Cups. One of the best. Yes. You can make an argument the best junior team ever, and they were in my division.
Easily.
Not always a bad thing. I think I got scouted a lot of games more because of that. Like, you know, we're playing them. Meelanx and Boucher are rated in and around the first round, and we're playing this team 20 times a year, kind of like exhibition and playoffs. People are going to, A, go to see them, and B, they're going to judge us against them more than any other team. So I have a big belief that part of the reason I was successful, at least as far as the draft, was playing in that division.
When you're playing them, they got like Iggy, Nat Domichelli, Baumgartner, all those guys.
They got Tyson, fourth line Tyson Nash, like 400 or 500 games.
And
in
is Hershey and Nats, or is that?
It was.
It's too early.
No, yeah, it was a little early. It was Rod Branch.
Hello? Oh, can you come back in 20 minutes?
So,
housekeeping?
One sec. Yeah, housekeeping. One second.
Here on Tales with TR, you never know who's going to drop by for a special appearance, even housekeeping from time to time. Right now, Terry's dealing with housekeeping. Is he going to come back into the picture? We're going to wait and see. He'd like to edit this part out, but I find it's very entertaining. A reminder, you can get Ken Reed's Hometown Hockey Heroes wherever fine books are sold. Ken Reed's Hometown Hockey Heroes, available now. And Terry's back in the picture. I just filled the time for you, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
She doesn't have to do the room. These ladies here, they come around and do the room every day. I'm like, you don't have to be making my bed every single day, but I do need some towels. That's good. Thank you. And then you can even leave me a bag if you want, if you don't want to do that. Okay. Thanks again.
Now, that's just behind the scenes. This is behind the scenes. The life of a television star right here.
Well, it's funny because, hey, look at this. One sec.
If you're on YouTube,
this is Shorzy season 3, and like these are my lines, like read through and everything. And like, you know, I leave it here, and I'm like, geez, you know, at some point, someone is in a room like in the 90s. This says Pulp Fiction. Like, you got to trust your maids, you know. And
again, my entrepreneurial mind, Terry, when season 3 comes out, you take that, you autograph the front, and you auction it off, and you'll get some coin. My entrepreneurial mind.
My God, I am going to do that. I always throw it away.
Dude, don't throw it away. People would love that.
Dude.
Well, listen,
thank you.
You're going to be signing a Comic-Con soon enough. Sign that, auction it off, cha-ching.
Boom. That's a great idea. I'll get to, you know what?
And don't do what you did with those hockey cards and get your mom and dad to sign them. I need an authentic Terry Ryan signature.
Yeah, thousands. Yeah, I'll tell that story. You know what? That's a good one. I'm going to tell that at the beginning of my next pod.
Yeah, it's a good story.
My parents signing all those signature rookie cards.
Bet the action on the ice with DraftKings Sportsbook. With DraftKings, you can bet on any game you want.
Whether you want to bet the puck line or the over-under, DraftKings has something for everybody. And if you want, you can throw down on your favorite player as an anytime goal scorer. Or if you're looking for a long-term bet, maybe you want to predict the Stanley Cup champion. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN. New customers get $150 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on hockey. That's promo code THPN, as in the Hockey Podcast Network, only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2023, all rights reserved.
Okay, so I'm reading about Randy Keller.
Yes.
That team in Kamloops, again, Nolan Baumgartner is one thing. They had Jason Strudwick, you know, 800 games in the NHL. They had Brad Lukowich was like third or fourth, fourth or fifth, actually. Jeez. He has two Stanley Cups, two different teams. Jason Holland, Buffalo, people even forget he was like sixth. But they had this one guy, man. He was smaller, like 5'10 defenseman.
Yeah.
Aaron Keller.
Okay.
Jesse Tucker was on that team. And Aaron Keller was a fucking all-star. He was a D that you, in the Western League during that time, who was small, not physical at all, and would get like 80, 90 points. Wow. And I was like, I hadn't heard of him. I go, yeah, I was reading this going, I wonder, are they related? And I don't know. But just, you know, part of the reason of your book is, you know, get in touch with the small and the stories of hockey. So I followed his story. Talk about success in the eyes of the beholder. He must have had some Asian descent because he went immediately after junior. He didn't go anywhere. He was a great player. He must have had offers. And he went to Japan, and he played there till like 13, 14. And I looked, and I saw Bert Henderson, Tavis Hansen, other guys that play with him. I'm like, oh, he must have hooked them up. Played for the Japan national team for like 7 years in a row. Like played
That's
like
incredible.
The Olympics B or whatever. Like, yeah, so here's a guy talking about that. He's in some place in Japan, you know, a long way from the NHL, but has had a whole career in life. He's probably got kids now.
I love that.
Many years over there as a result. So, you know, for every Randy Keller, there's also an Aaron Keller that also a hometown hockey guy that goes over and has experienced life from a great, or, you know, or has experienced his whole life kind of branches from hockey. And it's the furthest thing away from the NHL to be
that's
possible.
That's so cool because that's like any aspect of life, right? Everybody wants to be Gretzky or Bobby Orr. Every actor wants to be Tom Cruise. Every TV person wants to be, I don't know, Bob Costas or Bob Cole. Yeah. But there's so many other ways to survive and make an impact in your chosen field. And that's like, I mean, did you ever think that hockey would bring you to a hotel in Sudbury on a podcast with me while you're holding up season three of Shoresy? No.
Never. No.
Incredible.
Every day that's not lost on me. Yeah,
right. Incredible. I didn't think
as we get older, because there's more interconnections as we get older. For those that don't know, you know, when I just talked about Richie Perreault, right? I just passed off 07, 08 when I was in bed. I mean, that's where you and I were on the radio together.
Absolutely. Right?
Like, part of this so the day I heard about Richie Perreault, I might have been talking to you. I don't really know, but it's wild how it all weaves together. And
dude,
each day that goes by, let alone year.
I've told you, and this is the God's truth, I used to have this recurring dream that I played 7 or 8 games for the Montreal Canadiens.
That is wild.
And I grow up, and one of my best buddies played 7 or 8 games for the Montreal Canadiens. Like, it's just weird. It's the law of it. It's got to be the law of attraction or something.
It's weird. And you know what? Speaking of that, oh, I forget the quote. I wish I had it. Okay, wait. Page 191.
Yeah.
Because a lot of this, when I say, like, some of it resonates – listen to this quote. Now, picture me.
Yeah.
So I've got those 8 games in the show, and most of those I was playing with Mark Recchi. 2 of them on his line for a full game, and the exhibition game I scored in and fought Leach, I played with him. And that was my first NHL game, and he was with me. So I went to camps with him. I stayed with him. We were roommates in Mont Tremblant for camp. So I looked at him, like, and I looked up to him. He was an all-star already. Rex was probably only 25 or 26 what was that, 95? But
yeah,
you know, but he seemed way older, and he was just a big brother is one thing, like almost like a father figure kind of a guy, like Jean Beliveau. When I met him, he just owned the room. Like there was a presence. Mm-hmm. Rex didn't want to have that presence, but he did. Beliveau, I think, was aware of it and handled it well. Rex was young enough that he still wanted to have a few beers and be like me. But I was like, that's Mark Recchi. But listen to this. So he's talking about Recchi and Junior the same way. Like it's me at the. So he says the last name might ring a bell. Recchi had 1,533 points in the NHL. That winner, Recchi, led the Blazers, Kamloops, right, with Randy's plan, with 154 points. The AGHL superstar was getting a chance to play with a WHL superstar. It was awesome, says Randy. When I tell the young kids around here, just like me, when I have a chance to play with a guy with an outstanding NHL career like that, believe me, they were all ears. All you had to do was get to the spots and he would find you. I know I've said those exact words. I didn't have great numbers on the playoff run, but I put a few up. So that part went all right. You found the spots and the puck would be there already. You knew where you had to go. Plus, Mark was a great shooter, an underrated shooter. I think that's why the Penguins ended up taking him, because he could read the ice so well. That could have been, that's 1988. That could have come out of my mouth in 1996, the exact quote, other than the playoffs part.
Yeah, and then the guy in chapter two, his nephew just passed Mark Recchi on the all-time scoring list a couple
months imagine
ago.
That. Imagine that.
And, crazy.
And another thing, speaking of Recchi, this is why it takes me so long. Like to read one of your books, it takes me a long time because
you go Googling, down these wormholes, I bet.
I can't read past, you know, the St. Albert Comets and not look into what happened. I've spent time in St. Albert. I knew Richie Pro. I didn't know that. Little things. So I was like, man, Rex was dominant. You know, like I remember him telling me, and I never really looked at his stats because it's Mark Recchi. I'm like, 154 points. And one of the things he said to me, which made me feel comfortable at the time, he was like, you know, check out your draft, your stats. You know, yours were better than mine. I don't know if they were, but I had 110 points was his point. And he's like, you know, in a few years, you'll be up here too, just like this, with not even thinking about it. So it was nice. I remember him saying that. But I looked, what the fuck? He went in the fourth round. He had 154 points in his draft year. Now, Medano's bigger, I know, but went number one with 120. Like, went number one, like number two was Linden. Again, a huge, all I hear about that year from that league is Linden and Medano. Linden went number two, 70 points.
I'm just guessing off the top of my head. I'm guessing Mark's probably 5'10", 190. And I'm guessing the old foot speed. I bet you.
That's how much it mattered. Yeah. I can't believe it pushed him down. That again, Ty Domi went 27th.
Wow.
A formidable NHLer that did his job for years. But I just wouldn't have thought. Wow. Like, you know, people are watching
Luke Robitaille basically went last.
Yeah.
Foot speed. What was Mark listed at? Like 5'10", 185, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But in his draft year, I believe was 88.
Yeah, 88.
God, I'm a nerd. Size wasn't overemphasized in 88 the way it was in 95.
I can't believe to this level.
Weights in your legs. So what's he listed at? 5'10", 185, maybe?
He's listed at, he's exactly 5'10", 185. There you go.
Buddy, I need help. I need help.
You do need help,
And you can see I don't have a Google machine in my hands.
No, it's your hockey card. It's reading the back of the hockey cards.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm guessing there'd be some rep out on him as foot speed or something like that, which.
But I like.
But brain power is better than foot speed.
And like the next year, Ken, 1 year. Yeah. So he goes to the NHL. He goes to the I, right? Like 99 points in 60 games, obvious. Then he gets called up, 70 points immediately. Second year pro, he's 20 years old, 113 points in 70 games in the NHL.
Like, that's insane.
That's insane. You know,
how did all those scouts miss that?
I get that it was a tougher era, and I understand why guys were more important, that were big. But I mean, it's not like he's 5'2".
No.
Like, you know, like, and he was doing it in the Western League of all leagues. You would figure someone would put two and two together. And
you know what? Credit to the Pittsburgh Penguins, who I believe they're probably coached by Bob Johnson then, and then Scotty Bowman, didn't try to change him.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
they
a good
didn't
point.
Go, well, you scored at the Dub and you scored in the I, but now you're in the NHL. They didn't try to change him. They saw what he was and they let him do that in the NHL. Credit to them.
No, true enough.
And maybe his game forced them to do that too.
And by the way, Campbell, talking about Bruce Campbell, I do remember him in the Newfoundland Senior League.
Sure.
He came over at first a little bit earlier, and he played with Grand Falls, Stephenville, and like in my knowledge of it, and they, Cornerbrook were just – Campbell, being in that the reason I don't mention him as much, I was just more in love with Forbes as a kid. Like he was on the best team. He was – to me, he was by far the best. I didn't see Campbell enough, and he wasn't on teams that were winning. Right,
I love that Bruce was just, he doesn't know what to do after he tries out for the Fredericton Express. And Forbes Kennedy basically just shows up at his door in New Waterford's like, I'm getting the ferry to Newfoundland. You want to come? Yeah, all right. Let's go.
Yeah.
It's just gets awesome. On it.
Why not?
So innocent.
I love how Bruce Campbell, St. John's and Cape Breton were unique for that, where they would, like, it's the American Hockey League, not the Southern Professional League. And they would pull guys from senior, right? Yeah. Like, often. Andy Sullivan played like 30 games one year.
Yes.
Steve Scott.
He'd be in book two.
They often, The American Hockey League would pull, for those that don't know, from St. John's senior rather than often pick up from their East Coast League team or like teams that are players that were affiliated because there was a good enough locals. Why spend the money and the time if we don't have to? And Bruce Campbell was one of those in the American League.
It's still tough to get there. Imagine in 1990. But I just did the Buffalo and Canadians game last week. Mm-hmm. And working for the French broadcast crew was Danny Dubé, who was Bruce's head coach in Cape Breton. And like, oh, yeah, they'd be scouting players. And they'd be like, who's that guy skating out around there? He'd be and Danny would say, that's the assistant coach. He's 38 years old.
And you did it. You did it.
Yeah. So I gave Danny a book, and gave him Bruce's number. So they were excited to reconnect. So again, the hockey world's the best, man. You find yourself in Buffalo with the head coach of the guy who was the assistant coach who's in your book.
It's incredible. And weren't you there with Kobe?
Yeah, Army.
Kobe's a Red Deer Rebel. Like he came in. Kobe was 15.
Yeah.
When we went on a run. We went further than any Red Deer team. We lost in the final. We never should have. We had a 5-minute major. I won't say what happened because I don't want the guy to feel bad. And he was one of our best players. But we lost in the seventh game, and then Lethbridge went. That was in the Eastern Final. Then Lethbridge went to play Patrick Marleau and the Seattle Thunderbirds and beat them 4 straight, and then went to the Memorial Cup, lost it in overtime in the final to, I believe, the Hull Olympics. But anyway, so we definitely put Red Deer on the map. They'd been around since 92, and they were, like, out of the playoffs every year. They made a run. Me and BJ, I remember, at Hugh Gears, Aaron Asham, Jesse Wallen, captain of the World Juniors, Lance Ward. We had a bunch of first- and second-round picks. And but anyway, so then they won the Memorial Cup with Colby 2 years after that.
Yeah, he was a sniper, man.
So we felt part of that, you know.
Oh, good. Like
we all watched. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not
good
saying that we deserved the ring, but Colby, like, from 96, 97 to, like, 2002, when the last guy went through, Justin Mapletoft, it felt like an achievement that we were all kind of, like, we were very much reminded, okay, guys, we're going to start going for it. Red Deer's going to start going
for it. You pass the winning culture down.
Yeah.
You pass the winning culture down. Now, do you remember Colby from Bantam camps or anything like that when you were there?
No, because I do remember. I remember him and a guy, Justin Mapletoft, who was a great junior.
Didn't for that name, yeah.
And but Justin definitely played in Bridgeport. He might have gotten a few games for the Islanders, I believe. But
no, when I was working in Calgary covering the Hitmen, Colby was the head sniper in charge of the Red Deer Rebels.
We knew exactly who he was. He'd been to camp, right? And then I got traded there, and I was in at Montreal just waiting to go back to junior.
Yeah.
I was just waiting to set the 3-round record with 18 goals in 16 games.
Yeah.
Colby was on the radar and everybody knew who he was. And we called them up to like play and practice in the playoffs and stuff.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
and now he's doing Hockey Night in Canada. He's awesome, man.
I remember him like sending him messages when they won the Memorial Cup.
Yeah.
I was, you know, when you, Colby.
You know, when you walk in a room and you see somebody and they immediately make you smile. That's Colby Armstrong. You know,
exactly.
Colby. Yeah. He's a beauty.
It's so wild. Like, I feel like he was my teammate. Like, he's just a great, every time I see him. He really his positivity is contagious.
Yep, he's a beautiful person.
Okay, fuck, we're running out of time again, but I want to go to a few. I guess we could call them rapid fire randoms. Are you ready for another version of rapid fire randoms?
So, are you playing the role of Jim Perry, guest game show host here, like definition? I brought up definition on the air last week, and I know my references are dated. Ivanka had no idea what I was talking about. And then I'm like, card sharks, sale of the century, Jim Perry, no idea.
But those who get them love them.
Those who like it a lot.
Yeah, mom still watches that all the time, Game Show Network. My favorite by far, and this guy's on a planet up here. He's on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
Is the dude, oh God, Richard, he's Family Feud. He used to make out with everybody.
Richard Dawson, yeah.
Oh, man.
Dick Dawson.
He'd be canceled 4 minutes into the first episode.
When he filmed Running Man with Schwarzenegger, it took 3 takes for him to stop kissing Arnold. I'm making that up. Richard Dawson, tuxedo, just making out with everybody.
On the lips.
Right.
Every girl that comes through Family Feud. Hey, honey, like, how you doing?
So offside. Oh, my God. Game Show Mount Rushmore. Richard Dawson, Bob Barker.
Oh, for sure.
Pat Sajak and Trebek.
Gotta be. How fucking old is Pat Sajak? He's still
doing
it.
I don't know. Pat, you watch Airplane again. Pat Sajak's in Airplane.
I will. I tried to watch it the other night and it's gone but I'll just end up renting it.
I love, like, I can say to you, watch Airplane. You're like, yeah, I tried to watch it the other night. Anybody else on the planet other than you and I would be like, what are you talking about?
You know why? Because I was explaining The Naked Gun to the boys in the room. And I'm like, fuck, if you like The Naked, I recommended it and someone liked it.
Naked Gun, if you like Naked Gun,
you got to go back and see Airplane. Like,
doesn't,
you know,
happen without Airplane. No. They just took Slapshot off Netflix.
Oh, no, really?
It's garbage, yeah.
I didn't realize that. I got...
Oh, buddy, by the way, I was signing books at the Sports Card Expo, and signing beside me was Alan Nichols, better known as Johnny Upton from Slapshot. So he signed a picture for me from Chrysler Plant, Here I Come. So that was awesome.
That is, I remember, there's certain things that cross over.
Yeah.
Hockey might be, if you want to call the four major team sports, fourth in the United States, but Slapshot still ranks up. I saw it on like a list, a reputable like Sports Illustrated or something a couple years ago, like best sports movies ever, and it was like number 3. Like, it's still
not number 1.
People love, well, in Canada it would be number 1. I thought for the United States, for it to even be in the top 20 would be remarkable.
That's pretty incredible. Yeah.
But people who know what they're doing. Okay, here we go. Ken Reed, rapid fire randoms. Okay. You can say one sentence to your great 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 grandchild. One sentence. What do you make it? Is it words of advice? It could be, how you doing? It's not necessarily for the response, I guess. That's a tough one. I couldn't even answer that. But
spread love and joy.
Okay, I'll say all you need is love, quote the Beatles.
There you go.
It's a great answer, really. My mind went all over the place there. Wow, it was almost like warning shots. You know, great, 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 great would be 200 years from now, I guess.
If it was great, 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 great grandfather, I would have said, go south. Florida.
Yeah.
You know?
I often say that.
Go south.
Okay.
Why did you stop in Nova Scotia?
All these people are hypothetically alive and they're all in their prime. Who do you drive coast to coast with? You're doing something in Vancouver. You're following the Canucks. They've lost in the finals, and now you're going to go back to Pictou, Nova Scotia to visit home. You got to take one of these Pauls: Paul Simon, Paul McCartney, Paul Newman, Paul Rudd, Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman, or Paul Pierce, the basketball player.
Going with Paul Newman because I want to grill him about Slapshot, and it's really hard to take McCartney.
I you know what? I figured as much, and I peppered some pretty interesting Pauls around.
Yeah, Paul McCartney's in the back seat, but Newman's riding shotgun.
Newman.
Yeah, and I know you're taking McCartney.
I fucking love the Beatles, obviously, as you know. I mean, Tattoo. Mm-hmm. My daughter's name is Penny Lane, for those that don't. But I think I'd take Paul Newman there, too.
Really? Wow.
I fucking love his stuff. Like, especially that late. Like, I love him as much for the Sting.
Well, you're a Cool Hand Luke guy, right? No,
Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah.
Cool Hand Luke for sure. And then the Sting, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Dang. And then Slapshot. Those are my top 4, Paul Newman. Now there's a bunch more that are great that I could get into, but they're set, and he's my favorite. So like actor. So there's my second tier of Paul Newmans are still great, but those are my top 4.
I love it.
I just Cool Hand Luke doesn't get old for me. which Canadian team you think is going to go the furthest this year?
Well, you'd have to say Vancouver, wouldn't you? Although Edmonton seems to have found their game. I would say, I always think you need a great D in the playoffs. So Mr. Quinn Hughes can't go wrong with Vancouver the way they're playing. If I was to bet right now, I would say the Vancouver Canucks.
And who's? I think the Oilers are going to, I don't know, I just can't.
I wouldn't bet against them.
They're not going to. They got holes. Well, I mean, I'm covering them, right, with Jason Gregor on Mondays and Thursdays. So
they were awesome last night. They were out cold.
And that would have been their ninth in a row. And when at the beginning of the year, but I was following them. They were losing games, and they were out shooting the opposition like 50-18. It was it had to at some point, the house of cards was going to fall. And I just these guys now are on, like McDavid and fucking.
Oh, yeah, he's at another level.
Fucking insane, man. Which animal would you be if you could be reincarnated? If you could choose. And I don't mean like which animal has your personality traits, like, oh, I'm a lone wolf because I'm a wolf and I'm independent.
Sloth.
You'd be a sloth.
Yeah.
Really? Just fucking tired. Sit around.
Yeah.
Where do sloths live? Australia?
In trees.
Yeah, somewhere of it. It's not in the snow.
I don't think there's
anywhere in the world that there's a sloth in the snow, right?
I'm guessing. Yeah, I'm guessing. The jungle. Yeah.
The jungle. Yeah. So, and I just don't know many.
See, that tells you that, like, I love that answer, because if you asked me that yesterday, I would give you a different answer. I'm just tired today. I worked till 12:36 last night.
But you know what I like about the answer? Sloths, something is keeping them alive. So wherever they live, they don't have many predators. Otherwise, how the fuck would a sloth get away? Come on, they just hang out. They're the laziest bucks around in the mammal universe, and they don't seem to be getting slaughtered.
Eat ants all day. It's a good gig. Whatever.
Another thing. You ever think, like, chickens, they must only be alive because we domesticated them, right? Like,
yes,
was there a time that we said we should start domesticating? Like, how does a chicken live throughout any part of evolution?
Well, as Rocky showed us, they are evasive little bastards. You know, they can.
As Rocky showed us. Yes. Oh, boy. Nice. That's another good one. I watched them all again right in a row. Even the shitty one, number five. I watched
them. Oh, yeah. Five's tough to get through.
I just did it for the universe.
I didn't get a Nobel.
It's the toughest one, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not even really interested. It's like offer in its own thing.
Such a bad ending.
And you know what I'm doing now?
What?
I'm like halfway through watching all the James Bonds.
Now there's a I've never gone down that road.
You gotta do it. You gotta do it.
And I probably should. Here's the question. At what James Bond would you go, okay, that's now socially acceptable? Like, he'd be canceled up till about...
Yeah, right. you're not, okay. This is a whole thing. I was going to get into this. Like, a comedian could go an hour. You wouldn't believe it. I'm here with Ryan McDonald.
Yeah.
And I went back and I said, fuck, they're all on Prime. So I went back and I watched the first one. It's Sean Connery. It's either Dr. No, Goldfinger from Russia with Love, one of those. They're all right in a row, like 62, 65, 66.
Yeah.
Another one, You Only Live Twice. They're all like, those are the 60s ones with Connery.
Yeah.
Dude, it's unbelievable. In one of those, maybe From Russia with Love, with one of the, and then there's one with a guy, George Lazenby, and that rounds out the 60s, okay? And that one's called On Her Majesty's Secret Service. So they open up. Within the first three, within 15 minutes, Connery has bedded at least three women. Like, anybody that he's even, and then, the whole plot is that he has to go, and what happens is that there's always someone going to take over the world or whatever in some sinister way, right? And it's always like a name like Goldfinger.
Yeah.
And then there's always a girl, Jinx or Domino or one. This girl's name is Pussy Galore. And I'm
going, I've heard of that one. Yeah.
Like, how in the fuck can you get away with this? And then I guess you can get away with it because you can do whatever you want, but it's just like wild. Like, I thought this.
More conservative. Well, maybe not more conservative times.
It was more conservative times, even though the Beatles and everything were. I think
Free
it was.
Love was starting. You know, like it wasn't like the 50s.
Let's spend the night together on Ed Sullivan. The Stones couldn't say "Let's spend the night together," which is their song's name, on Ed Sullivan. They had to say "Let's spend some time together."
Wow.
So that's the kind of time we're thinking about, right? So, So in this world, whoever Goldfinger, whatever villain it is, I forget, they all blend together at some point because they're very similar, but they're worth watching. He's hypnotizing people that he's going to make robots and take over the world.
Yeah.
So Connery breaks in, and it's like, think of a penitentiary, but they don't realize it. So they all got rooms, but it's a little bit exotic. They got views of the ocean and everything, but they're on lockdown. But anyway, it just happens to be 50 unreal women, all sure like in is. Their prime, dressed like it's Halloween, like it's fucking wild. And he breaks into like two of the rooms, like trying to solve the problem, and like bangs one, and then he breaks into the other one. And then like the girl that tries to kill him, he like stops her and then pins her up against the wall and starts making out with her, and he bangs her. And I'm like, what the fuck? This should just be called the sexual exploits of 007 and the odd time something breaks out. It's fucking wild. And the beginning, I'm like, I was telling McDee, I go, the further I go back, the more it pushes the boundary until you're at like the in the second one, he like he goes down and the girl catches him and he like pins her up against the wall and she's trying to move and he like makes out with her and that makes everything good. Basically, yeah, it's fucking crazy. But anyway, the other thing, I know I'm talking a lot, but for those listening, I don't penalize Sean Connery or anything because it was a different time. That's why it was accepted.
He was an actor. He's just following the script, I guess.
Yeah, right?
He didn't write the
there is a level of humor you can look back, you know? I mean, it's not all about – I get it. I understand why it all changed.
Sexual exploits of 007.
But it is worth watching. It was comical to us from the point of view. It was like, holy shit.
Well,
like,
yeah. Really now when you sometimes – yeah, now sometimes when you watch old movies, they're more comical than anything. It's like when my kids watch, they want to watch Friday the 13th. I won't let them, but they've seen some old movies and like, this looks like when they watch Star Wars, like, this isn't CGI. Like they can like point crap out, right?
So, yes, it just shows you the time. Like I remember I did this in a couple of film courses in school, but you know, the further you go back, white people are wearing blackface, which is highly offensive. But still, if I'm showing Penny Lane, I'm like, this is what it was. This is the culture. This is what it was
considered normal. Yeah.
You're not just promoting it, but that's what it was. So now
we've evolved. Yeah.
Right. It teaches you about the world anyway. So,
that's how you learn about the world in a lot of ways, is studying old film and what was socially acceptable at the time. Right?
Exactly. You're not just learning about old films, you're learning about what was acceptable
by society. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
James Bond, it's always a little bit tongue-in-cheek. It's worth watching, but it is funny. Yeah, there's no way that half of the movies, half of the content would have to be rearranged. Like, it would just have to be.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what Austin Powers did with it, right? It just kind of
made a mockery of it. Yeah. My favorite.
How foolish it was. If I take this dental floss and we can jump up, well, why don't you just take the stairs? No. Dad, why don't you just go back in time in your time machine and shoot him in the back of the head when he's on the toilet? Scott.
Now that I've seen it, and sure, last night the one I watched, or actually I'm halfway through now, is called The Spy Who Loved Me, and the spoof that he did was The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Goldmember was Goldfinger.
Yeah.
So I'm going to watch the Austin Powers after that. Sorry, I'm going
off. My kids love Austin Powers, as do I.
Yeah. Jesus, it's fucking hilarious. What's your favorite now defunct NHL team?
Favorite now defunct NHL team? Well, if it's a logo thing, you got to go Hartford Whalers or Kansas City Scouts, which was a fantastic logo, or Cleveland Barons. See, I love the 70s.
I didn't say logo.
No. So I'm going to go for defunct. I'm going to go, because of the old Dennis Marouk connection, let's go with the California Golden Seals.
Another great book. What was the name of the Marouk one again?
The Unforgettable Story of Hockey's Forgotten 60 Goal Man.
60 goal scorer, yeah. And you've got 7 books out, right?
Yes, sir. 7.
Will you ever go to Australia, you think?
No. No desire.
I'll tell you something. I don't know. I'm just going to speak. Actually, give me another couple answers. Your favorite coach of all time?
Scotty Aiken, Bantam C. Awesome. 75 games or so. Scotty, if you're listening, much love. Scotty was a great hockey player, played for Mount A, played for the Pictou Merpacs, was a great ref in Pictou.
Hence a hometown hockey hero.
Absolutely.
Would you rather lose 3 fingers on your right hand or the entire left hand?
I think I'd lose 3 fingers on the right.
If you could pick any 3 fingers, I guess you could keep these.
Pick these two. Yeah, keep these two. Yeah.
Keep those and then keep the left hand. I think I'd chop my left hand off.
I can still go. There you go.
You know what? I think I'd get a hook and I'd just go a different route and go, okay.
Really?
Yeah. If I had to have no fucking limb now, if I had to.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I would get a hook because it looks nice, but I would, if that was my options, I love my right hand and throwing
Pirates things are very Newfoundland too, but you could also probably go Luke Skywalker. We're pretty advanced. You could probably get something pretty fancy or Astar Robot. I can put my arm back on, but you can't, so play safe. You probably get
I
that.
Think within 5 years I'd have a new hand anyway. Yeah. I think where our technology, it's probably there now and I don't even know about it.
It's probably there now, exactly.
Well,
don't know. You don't want to look like Apollo Creed though in Happy Gilmore, right? With his hands.
Oh my Jesus, yes. Fuck, I forgot that. You know what?
Yeah.
And I also forgot. So I watched all the Rockies again.
Yeah.
And I didn't forget.
He was jacked, eh?
He was jacked. And I don't know why this was lost on me, but I went back so many times and my ex-wife or a buddy or someone that hadn't seen Rocky. So I would always go, okay, let's watch the first three, and then I'd watch six.
Ivanka has not seen Rocky.
I think I heard you say that on the air once.
Yeah,
But in number four, I forgot the reason that he goes over to beat Drago.
Because Drago killed Apollo. Apollo.
I mean, I knew it happened, but it was just so far gone. And I guess at the time I considered that one. I loved it. It was Rocky.
That was the wheelhouse when you're a kid and you're up in the theater cheering for Rocky. That was a great time.
Right. When you didn't really know much about film or what.
Right. I watched three and four as a kid long before I watched one and two.
Yeah, me too.
One and two were films. Three and four were like, okay, let's make some money off this stuff.
We're popcorn, but it was great when you were 10 years old.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something that I forgot. I was watching a thing on YouTube the other day about Deion Sanders.
Yeah,
that's wild. So Deion Sanders played in the NFL and Major League Baseball. When he came into the baseball, people were kind of offended with the Yankees. I think it was more of a stunt than anything because he really elevated quick for a guy, like obviously because he was a star. And then football and baseball were kind of vying for the various teams. They wanted him, so they were kind of battling over getting it.
Yeah.
So he could kind of pull it off, but it was almost like a bad attitude thing. Where he'd like play one and go to, but neither.
He would take the helicopter to the other games.
Yes. Now until he played one in one day until he went to Atlanta where the Braves played ball. No pun intended, but they were like, okay, you're cool to play football and baseball, but please, if we're in the playoffs, play with us. Right. So, but he dangled that forever. And like, I didn't realize I knew Bo because Bo Jackson was like an all-star in both. But Sanders ended up being pretty good. Like he had one real good year in baseball, real tankers. Mm-hmm. But I was like, wow. And it would be hard to pull that off. How did Bo Jack? Like, what was the deal? Like, because Bo Jackson, I don't remember being like hard to deal with. But
your
played.
Your timing's perfect. Your timing's perfect. Right now, I'm reading Jeff Perlman's book on Bo, the last folk hero, and I just got past the chapter where he just plays his second and first NFL season. So. Second NFL season. So his deal when he signed with Kansas City was because everyone thought he was going to pick football, right? Because he was a Heisman Trophy winner. So everyone's like, he's not going to pick baseball. So they end up taking him in the fourth round or whatever it was. But when he signs with Kansas City in 1986, they have it in his contract that they have to call him up that year. So he starts in AA with the Memphis Chicks, and then they had to call him up for September.
Wow.
So he actually just left Memphis August 28th, didn't tell anybody, and showed up in
Kansas
City.
That's what happened.
Yeah, he's like, I'm ready. So so that was one of the things they dangled out there. And so a lot of people in baseball were like, he shouldn't be in the majors yet. Right? He's only in the majors because he's Bo Jackson, right along the lines of what you're saying
with Sanders.
With Sanders. But he goes to camp next year, he gets his spot and kind of struggles again, but such a natural athlete. That he could hang and he could do amazing things. And he just didn't learn to do amazing things consistently till around 1989. And that's when it took off for him. But just to me, that's the greatest athlete I'll ever see in my life. Like athlete, I'm not talking dominant in individual sport, but athlete. I mean, he, in college, he didn't even play baseball his second year because he didn't like the coach. Third year, he shows up, he's smashing balls everywhere. He'd run track just for something to do because he liked to run. Yeah, just a genetic freak. And it's
a great,
it's pretty cool.
I didn't realize the book.
Yeah. If you're going to buy two books, you can buy that third or fourth. You got to buy TR's next.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Thanks for plug for a plug. But I'm fascinated because at the time I didn't realize. And looking back, I've often said, hey, there's Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders. I don't see anybody else as a two-sport athlete, like for real, that are going back.
No.
But here, half the reason is scheduling. How would you? So they really got – it was unique with the way the contracts were structured, with the way it all went down.
And
they
also,
both happened close, like to the timing.
Also, with the innocence of sports back then, you played football in the fall. You ran track you did basketball in the winter, baseball in the spring. Right now, it'll never happen again because a kid has to focus on one sport. Which is absolute garbage.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Bo Jackson thing. He was pure power. He was athletically just genetically superior to, like, he was one of those guys that was ripped without working out. You know those dudes? And you're like, wow, you're an awesome athlete.
Imagine.
And he showed up in high school, had never thrown the discus before and set a state record. He was throwing it like a frisbee. And they're like, no, Bo, throw it like this. So he does it. State record. He's just one of those guys. Amazing.
One of the best players in two of the four major sports.
At the same time.
At the same time.
Well, it's kind of hinting now as I read the book that the physical demands are kind of catching up to him, which is foreshadowing the hip injury that's coming. But I would think if he played just one, he would have been a Hall of Famer.
I know. And it's terrible because you want to see it. It's just like without the whole Toronto shenanigans went on last week. It's like Ohtani. I'm like, everybody, I want to see him pitch and hit. It's crazy every time he does it. And now, like that, again, outside of all the Dodgers thing or whatever you think of the guy, he's a fucking unreal athlete.
Yeah.
I hope he gets back to pitching. I don't know why. It would probably be better if he didn't.
It's going to be crazy to see what happens this year just concentrating on hitting. Because he can't pitch because of the Tommy John. I like when they asked him if he had Tommy John, second Tommy John. He's like, well, I had some procedure, but I don't know what it was called. The first thing I'd ask the doctor is, what's this called? What are you doing? But I guess he trusts his physicians.
Wild stuff. Okay. Yeah. We've been on just over an hour. I got to take off. I got some Shorzy things to do, as in read my lines. Tomorrow's going to be a huge, huge day. One of our last, and towards the end, we make up for things that we might have missed.
All right. Well,
a lot of filling in the blanks tomorrow.
Make sure you save that script book, sign it one day and auction it off, and make sure Jared gets a copy of the book because I think it's right up his alley too.
I certainly will on both levels. Do you have anything else to talk about or plug before we go?
Ask Jared if you saw the David ML fight last week from the LNAH when the nose was broken and Derek Parker still fighting in that league, which is quite something.
You guys both, by the way, are the two people I know outside of Quebec that really, I mean, I pay attention a little tiny bit, but you guys have like a real knowledge of what goes on in that league. Hats off to you.
He lives in Quebec. I might be the only guy outside of Quebec then, right?
Yeah, true.
Say hi to Nasty. Say hi to your parents. Love you, buddy. And I'm glad that I'm your Brent Musburger, right? Or no, was it? No, who was it? Merv Albert would just hop on Letterman at a moment's notice. So I'm your Merv Albert. Happy to be there.
My Merv Albert, another great sports name right there.
Oh, yeah.
Half the people listening have no idea what we're talking about.
Not a clue. That's the beauty of it. Like you said, those who like it a lot. Those who get it. I did dice on the air the other night. Sammy Montembeau, so very nice. Stops the Leafs, not once, but twice. Oh! And somebody got it. So that's what
somebody. Hey, I always get them. Keep up the great work. Thanks for coming on again today. And I'll see you after Christmas. I'll be in Toronto. It was too hectic this time, but I'll see you then.
No worries. Merry Christmas, buddy.
Love you, buddy. See ya.
You too.
That was Ken Reed, folks. The book is Hometown Hockey Heroes. Check this out. I'm telling you, I love Ken's books, but this one was definitely the one that struck home the most. I identified with it as you don't have to be from a small town, or you don't even have to play hockey. I think it's something if you were passionate about something, you looked up to something, no matter what sport it was, and you're from a hometown that might be not even tiny always. They often are, but maybe something distinctive about your home, and you know a local legend on any level. It's kind of what this book reminds me of, the Hometown Hockey Heroes. the hockey part is specifically hockey, I guess. You know, your heroes in this book all play hockey, but they're heroes for other reasons. They're pillars of the community, whatever one they're talking about. They might be not be international or international celebrities. They might not be famous. They might not be NHL players, but they're just local heroes. Could be hockey, could be baseball, and it could be Glee Club, whatever it is. If you're from a hometown and you've had a hero, everybody's from a hometown, I guess, right? Then it'll resonate, Nate, with you. What I'm trying to say is that there's something in this book for everybody. And I'm featured in it. In the second chapter, Robbie Forbes, one of my idols growing up. Read all about him. Sidney Crosby's uncle. I'll leave it there. You want any more, you're going to have to buy the book. Folks, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. I'm going to be back on a normal schedule again next week with some great guests. Continued. Ken is one of my favorites, and we've had, you know, it's been pretty good up here in Sudbury, but after Christmas now I'll be at home, and I'll put them out on Tuesdays and Thursdays like normal. And until then, check out the Jason Greger Show on Mondays and Thursdays at 3 to 6 o'clock Alberta time. I'll be on there. If you're downtown St. John's, you want a beer, you want to check out George Street, why not? Start at Trinity Pub. Move your way up the street. Go to TJ's Pub, maybe Rob Roy Confusion, maybe Martini Bar, definitely Greensleeves Pub, and of course Bull and Barrel. If you're going to go for a bite to eat, do it at Loose Tie. Start there. If Loose Tie's full, head on over to Merchant Tavern or Blue on Water. Awesome place, awesome people. And if you need some catering or you're up Elizabeth Avenue way, check out Wedgwood Cafe. If you want strength and balance for the body and mind, check out Rope Walk Lane, Power Conditioning. If you want Mr. Lube, there's two locations in St. John's, Newfoundland. One on Torbay Road, one on Kenmont Road. Live, laugh, lube, Pitbull Pain Relief, the pain sticks that just don't quit. Go to www.pitbullpainrelief.com. And of course, True Hockey, take what's yours. Folks, I'll be back in just a few days. Thanks to Ken Reed. Awesome catching up with him as always. Check out the book, Hometown Hockey Heroes. And have a great fucking weekend. I know I will. Catch you guys on the rebound.